was watching a playoff hockey game just a few months ago, and the goalie on one of the teams made a bad mistake. The opposing team had shot a puck in, and it was on the boards behind the net, and he went around to play the puck. And you know, goalies, they wear a big, heavy catching glove on one hand. This other glove has a blocker on it, and they have a big, heavy stick. And it's not very good for stick handling. And so sometimes goalies can be a little scary when handling the puck. And so this guy goes around behind the net and picks up the puck and starts trying to pass it and just completely flubs it and ends up just scooting the puck just a few feet along the boards, where a guy from the other team comes in, picks it up, passes it right out in front, and there's a guy from the opposing team with the puck and a wide open net. Boom, stuck it in. Ooh, bad mistake. It reminded me of something that my son did a long time ago when he was in high school. I was actually coaching his high school hockey team, and this was their first year, and we were a team that just shocked a lot of people because this team first time and all of a sudden came out of nowhere, and we were really good. And we were really good, especially because we had two guys on that team that were just outstanding. One of them was a skater that just was a terrific puck handler, scorer, shooter. The other was Toby, who is a terrific goalie. And we won a lot of games that we probably shouldn't have won because a goalie can actually keep you in a game or actually take over a game, and he did. But we had this one game, we were up against a team, this was in a tournament, we were up against a team that we were supposed to have no chance against. And we got down, there were a couple of minutes left in the game, and it was a 1-1 game. We were right there, and we thought we might be able to sneak a win out of these guys because we've just been able to keep the puck out of that. Toby done a great job. So they fired the puck in, the other team fired the puck in, and Toby went to play the puck. And he picks up the puck with a stick, and he looks up, and our best skater is skating back to help out. And right near him is a guy from the other team skating back. And so in that situation, Toby should, his job, his thing I taught him is pass the puck along the boards behind the net around to the other corner of the rink where our guy can go over and pick it up. But Toby thought, if I pass the puck out to my buddy, he's going to be able to take the puck and skate back and might get a scoring chance out of this. So that's what he decided to do. He fired the puck out, and it went right onto the stick of the guy from the other team, who promptly shot it right into the wide-open net for the game-winning goal. When the game was over, I said to Toby, what was that? And he said, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And so I said, for future reference, it wasn't. Don't ever do that again. You know, okay, Dad, you're right. So it seemed like a good idea. Isn't it amazing how many times when you have that sort of thing where you think, boy, it seemed like a good idea at the time, turned out not to be so smart. Lori and I were with our son-in-law and daughter, Michael and Carissa, recently, and we were at Pensacola, Florida, and we were driving home from there to their home in Meridian, Mississippi. On the way, we stopped at Mobile, Alabama, and we were going to eat this restaurant they love there. And we're driving through downtown Mobile, and Lori sees this sign, says, oh, stop, I got to get a picture of this. And so she did. Street sign. It says, speed lump, 15 miles per hour. Speed lump? Not a speed bump, a speed lump. Somebody thought it was a good idea to call it a speed lump, even though the rest of the world calls it a speed bump. Isn't that a great picture, you know? Speed lump, really? Sometimes people get ideas, and afterwards you think, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. David, great King David, before he was king, we're going to see him today, as we continue our study of his life, have a couple of ideas that to him seem like good ideas, that turned out to be disastrous. And he made these decisions, he had these ideas because of there was a common mistake that he made that shows up a lot in our lives that will always lead to ideas that seem to be good that turn out to be disastrous. So we'll look at this incident, a couple of incidents actually, in 1 Samuel 21 from the life of David. David went to Nob to Ahimelech the priest. Ahimelech trembled when he met him and asked, "Why are you alone? Why is no one with you?" David answered Ahimelech the priest, "The king sent me on a mission and said to me, 'No one is to know anything about the mission I'm sending you on. As for my men, I have told them to meet me at a certain place. Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever you can find.' But the priest answered David, 'I don't have any ordinary bread on hand. However, there's some consecrated bread here, provided the men have kept themselves from women.' David replied, 'Indeed, women have been kept from us as usual whenever I set out. The men's bodies are holy, even on missions that are not holy. How much more so today?' So the priest gave him the consecrated bread, since there was no bread except the bread of the presence that had been removed from before the Lord and replaced by hot bread on the day it was taken away. Now, one of Saul's servants was there that day, detained before the Lord. He was Doeg the Edomite, Saul's chief shepherd. David asked Ahimelech, 'Don't you have a spear or a sword here? I haven't brought my sword or any other weapon because the king's mission was urgent.' The priest replied, 'The sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom you killed in the Valley of Elah, is here. It is wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you want it, take it. There is no sword here but that one.' David said, 'There's none like it. Give it to me.' That day, David fled from Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. But the servants of Achish said to him, 'Isn't this David, the king of the land? Isn't he the one they sing about in their dances? Saul has slain his thousands, but David his tens of thousands.' Well, David took these words to heart and was very much afraid of Achish, king of Gath. So he pretended to be insane in their presence. And while he was in their hands, he acted like a madman, making marks on the doors of the gate and letting saliva run down his beard. Achish said to his servants, 'Look at the man. He's insane. Why bring him to me? Am I so short of madmen that you have to bring this fellow here to carry on like this in front of me? Must this man come into my house?'" Okay, so what happened here? Well, first of all, at the heart of all that goes on here is David failing to trust God. The first thing that we can see is David's failure to trust caused great harm. David's on the run from Saul. He has no illusions that he can remain anywhere near the what was then the capital of Gibeah, which was Saul's hometown. So he had tried hiding out with the prophet Samuel in Ramah, but Saul's intelligence network found him there. That didn't work. So next he runs to the town of Nob, and he finds Ahimelech, who was a descendant of the chief priest, very important guy. It's interesting that Ahimelech, as soon as he meets David, it says he trembled. Well, why? Well, he sees that David is alone. David was, at this point, highly ranked in the army, which meant he went with an entourage everywhere he went. And all of a sudden, he shows up alone. Now, Ahimelech no doubt knew that there were problems between Saul and David. So when David shows up all by himself, he's got a clue that this is not a good sign. David's all alone because he's probably on the run. And so he's a little bit afraid. He's afraid because he thinks, if he's running from Saul and I help him, then I'm going to be in trouble with Saul. It's going to put me in jeopardy. But David is known as a great warrior. If I don't give him help, he might threaten me. The poor guy's in a lose-lose situation. Well, David comes up with a solution. "Not to worry, Ahimelech. I know it looks bad. I know it looks like I'm on the run and I'm all by myself. I'm all alone. But see, the truth is, I'm on a secret mission. I'm here. Saul said, nobody must know. It needs to look like you're a fugitive and that I'm out to get you. But you're going to do my bidding." He said, "That's what's really going on here." Now, you know, we've sort of seen the stories of somebody who does some behavior that is completely wild and then says, "Yeah, but see, I work for the CIA. And everybody goes, "Yeah, okay." That's what David's trying to pull off. Ahimelech bought it. "Oh, secret mission for Saul. Okay, it's all good." You know, he asked about his men. David doesn't have any men with him. He's running. He's on the run. He's lying through his teeth. "Oh, yeah, my men, they're out there. They're good. I just need some bread." So Ahimelech doesn't have any bread. He's only got the bread that was actually put in the areas of worship, was dedicated to the Lord. He's got yesterday's bread, but he says, "Well, since you're on a secret mission, I can give you that." So that's what he does. David says, "I need a weapon." Great, we've got Goliath's weapon here. You can have that. That's great. This is great. So David gets all the things he needs. There's only one problem here. All of it is based on a blatant lie. You know, you need a little background here. Remember, we looked at a couple of weeks ago a story where David was being threatened by Saul and God saved him repeatedly. First through the intervention of Jonathan, then through the intervention of Michal, and then the last one was hilarious. Remember the story where Saul sent assassination teams after him? You may remember the scene from the first Star Wars movie. Remember the scene where Luke and Obi-Wan Kenobi are entering Mos Eisley with the droids that the Imperial troops were looking for, and they get stopped by some stormtroopers? Remember the scene? And Obi-Wan goes, "These aren't the droids you're looking for." And the guy goes, "These aren't the droids we're looking for." I love this poster have you seen this one? It's got the guy here and it says, "Fired. As it turns out, those were the droids you were looking for." So, you know, it was the Jedi mind trick, you know. Well, God pulled a Jedi mind trick on the assassination teams, and then ultimately on Saul himself. They would come and they were going to kill David, and God says, "This isn't the man you're looking for. This isn't the man we're looking for," you know. And David gets away because God does this weird thing on Saul's assassination hit teams and then even on Saul himself. And you have to ask, why did that happen? That happened because God wanted to give David a vivid, clear demonstration that he was absolutely safe, that Saul could never touch him, because God had said, "You are going to be the king. You can't be the king if you're dead. I keep my promise. So even if I have to pull a Jedi mind trick, the old 'these aren't the droids we're looking for' trick on Saul, I will do it to keep you safe." And David, in this situation, has forgotten that lesson. And he said, "Oh no, Saul is coming to get me. I'm in danger. I've got to take care of myself. I've got to come up with some scheme that will protect me." And so he lies. He lies through his teeth to Ahimelech to get some help. Now, you might think, it was not a big lie, you know, it's understandable. Well, yeah, but it's coming from disobedience to God. God said, you don't lie to people, you tell the truth. David's violating that, and he's not operating out of faith. He's not believing God's promise to take care of him. Verse 7 here gives you a warning that bad things are going to happen. It says, there's a guy there, Doeg. He's an Edomite, meaning he's not actually Israeli. He's from the nation of Edom, but he works for Saul as a shepherd, chief shepherd. He's there, and he sees all of this. And in the next chapter, you see the result of David's actions. In chapter 22, verse 9, Saul is ranting and raving because he can't find David and he feels like people are helping him. And so Doeg says, "I'll help. I saw Ahimelech the priest help David over in Nob. He gave him bread and a sword." Well, Saul confronts Ahimelech and he says, "Why have you conspired me?" Verse 13, "Why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse, giving him bread and a sword and inquiring of God for him so that he has rebelled against me and lies in wait for me as he does today?" Now, there's so much wrong with that statement. David wasn't rebelling against him. David wasn't trying to kill him. But Saul has lost touch with reality, and all he knows is, "I got to kill David." Well, the priest replies, says, "Well, David is loyal to you." And he says, "Besides, he tricked me. I thought he was working for you." Doesn't matter. In verse 16, Saul said to him, "You will surely die, Ahimelech. You and your whole family." David's lie cost Ahimelech his life. Not only that, verse 17 says Saul ordered the kids, the guard, not the guard, the kids, no, the guards to kill the priests, but they refused because they said, these are the priests of God. We're not going to do that. So Doeg, who's Edomite, he's not from Israel. He doesn't have great respect for God. He doesn't care. He says, I'll do it. Kills Ahimelech, kills the priests that are with him, 85 of them. And then we're told in verse 19, he also put to the sword Nov, the town of the priests, with its men and women, its children and infants, cattle, donkeys, and sheep. He slaughtered an entire town. And do you know why that happened? It happened because David lied. One man escaped from that town as the son of Ahimelech, as a guy named Abiathar. He ran, he fled to David. And in verse 22 of chapter 22, David says to him, I am responsible for the death of your whole family. That's a little bit of a weight to bear, don't you think? All because David wouldn't trust God. Now, that's horrific. But it's not the end of the fun here. Second thing that happens is David's failure to trust caused disgrace. David realized at this point, I've got to get out of Saul's sphere of influence, but the only way I can do that is by leaving Israel because he's got spies everywhere. The only place I can go is someplace he doesn't have spies. So David decides in verse 10, he'll go to the town of Gath. Okay, why is that out of it? Well, Gath was a Philistine town. It was the hometown of the late great Goliath. Now, he certainly was out of Saul's reach there, but does that look like a wise decision to you? I mean, I don't know what he was expecting. Maybe he thought no one would recognize him. You know, I mean, it wasn't like they had TV. They could say, oh, yeah, here's the great David of Israel. You know, maybe they wouldn't recognize him. I don't know what he was thinking. But he goes to the place where he's at the capital of the enemy that he's been fighting against. I had a friend in college who told me about an incident that happened in his life when he was in high school playing football. He says there was an incident where this is very current given what's been going on in football. He got hit really hard in the head, and he said he briefly blacked out. And he said nobody really knew it because it didn't last very long. He was just down on the ground. He said, you know, all of a sudden he was out, and then he woke up. Obviously had a concussion, and he kind of staggered up, and he said his brain was a little scrambled, and all he could think of was, I got to get to the huddle. I got to get to the huddle. So he went to the huddle. The only problem was he went to the wrong huddle, joined the huddle of the other team, you know, and they looked at him and went, what are you doing here? You know, David does the same thing. He goes to the wrong huddle, the wrong team. I'll go join them. What are you thinking? Verse 11, he was recognized. They start saying, hey, isn't this David, the king of the land? Possible they had already heard the rumors that he's going to be the next king of Israel. Isn't he the one they sing about in their dances? Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. His tens of thousands of what? Tens of thousands of Philistines. Hello? Where are you? I'm among the Philistines. That can't go well. You know, they're singing this song. That song has gotten David in a lot of trouble. I don't know if you remember, that was the one where Saul first started having the problems because they're singing about thousands for Saul and tens of thousands for David. Now here it is again. Oh yeah, they sing about how this guy's been killing thousands of us. This is the guy. Do you know who Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is? He's the head of ISIS. There was a recent article in New York Post that carried an interview with Saja al-Dulaimi, who is an ex-wife of al-Baghdadi. And she said she wasn't married to him for very long. She said while she was married to him, she had no idea who he was. She thought he was just a businessman. And she said he was very brusque. He wasn't very kind. But she had no idea he was the head of ISIS. She said, quote, "He seemed like a normal family man." So here's the thing. What if this normal family man decided he wanted to take his family to the happiest place on earth, to Disneyland? How do you think he would be welcomed here in the United States? "Oh, Abu, so glad you're here. We hope you have a nice stay at the Tragic Kingdom." I don't think so. This guy's the world's leading terrorist. He's not going to be welcomed here. David wasn't going to be welcomed very well in, among the Philistines either. Verse 12, David took these words to heart and was very much afraid. You think? He suddenly realized he had jumped out of the frying pan right into the fire. And he could, he's thinking, what am I going to do? He decides the only reason people might think that I would think it's a good idea here is I'm insane. So I'll just live that one out. They'll probably buy it. Why else would he come here? And so David starts drooling, starts scratching on the doors, starts saying, "What are you doing, David? I'm putting, it's too dark in here, I'm putting stars up in the sky to give us more light." Oh, this guy's nuts. They take him to the king, and the king basically says, "Do we have a shortage of madmen, so we're having to import them from Israel now? Why do you bring this guy to me?" Here's the thing. The interesting thing David understood was in the Philistine culture, they weren't cruel to crazy people, but they didn't have real good mental health programs either. Their program basically was, just let them go do whatever they're going to do, and maybe they'll clean up the gene pool all on their own, So that's what they're going to do with David. Just get this guy out of here. He's nuts. He's Looney Tunes. That's exactly what David was hoping for. They're going to leave him alone. But imagine David. Here is this guy. He is called by God to be the next king of Israel. He is a respected man. He's a great warrior. He's an incredibly intelligent, godly man. And he's having to act like a nut job to protect himself. He has disgraced himself and put himself in a horrible situation. Why? Because he did not trust God. And so he had to rely on his own wisdom, and it put him in another awful situation and disgraced him. Okay. Yeah, we got that going on again. We'll hear it again. That's an interesting sort of historical incident, but we have to ask, why did God record this for us? What is he telling us? Well, there's some direct application of what happened in these stories, though it may not seem like it at first, to us. This chapter depicts what happens when God's people stop believing that God's provision is sufficient. David is a poster boy for that reality. The core principle of the new covenant that Jesus came, we're told that and by Ezekiel the prophet, that God's going to set up a new covenant, and Jesus, the Messiah, came to set up a new covenant, a new relationship with God. And at the core of that is one great principle: what God supplies is enough. Oh, I've heard that somewhere before. What God supplies is enough. When Jesus Christ came into this world, died on a cross, as the payment for our sins so that we could be forgiven, what he did was sufficient. It was enough. And the new covenant is all about us trusting that what God provides through Jesus Christ is all we need. It's sufficient. And that principle becomes the engine of all of the Christian life. It applies everywhere in everything we are and everything we do. It all is based on this idea: what God supplies is enough. I trust what God supplies for me. Paul fretted at one point in his life because he had some physical ailments that were obvious to other people. And he thought, first of all, it made life more difficult for him. And he felt made him less effective in ministry. And he also thought it impacted his ministry because he thought, well, people look at this and they say, wow, you're like that. That's, you know, God doesn't seem to be blessing you. And he saw it as a big impediment to his ability to effectively minister. And so he prayed repeatedly, God, take this thing from me. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9. Do you remember God's response? He said, no, Paul, I'm going to leave you with that thing because I want you to remember this one great truth. My grace is sufficient. My power is completed in your weakness. You're going to see my power not through your ability and your effectiveness, but through your weakness and you having to rely on what I supply. My grace is sufficient. What God provides is enough. That truth is at the heart of our relationship with God, and it is at the truth of everything we do. Now, here's the problem. When we fail to believe God's provision is sufficient, we will disobey God. Happens every time. Romans 14, 23 says, everything that does not come from faith is sin. When we are not trusting God, when we're not believing in His provision, what's going to happen is sin. It's going to be disobedience to God. Always. In David's case, what happened was he quit believing that even though God had given him amazing evidence that he could trust that God would protect him, he quit believing that and said, I got to do it myself. I got to protect myself. It's up to me. And he started cooking up dumb schemes, lies, running off to Gath, doing these kinds of things to try to protect himself. And the lies, flat out lies, this wild tale about being an undercover operative was horrific. You know, just the lie itself is disobedience to God. But underneath, every time we lie, there's actually another sin going on. And that sin is, another act of disobedience is that we are refusing to love other people. When we lie to people, we are thinking about ourselves and taking care of ourselves and not thinking about them. This story in David's life is the extreme example of that. Let me ask you, was David loving Ahimelech in this situation? No, David knew he was lying to Ahimelech because if he told him the truth, Ahimelech probably wouldn't help him because Ahimelech knew if he did, it would put him in danger from Saul. And so David said, well, I need his help. Me taking care of me is more important than what happens to him. So he lied, and he sacrificed Ahimelech and ultimately an entire town to protect himself. You know, that's not the only time something like that happened. That was the most extreme. But in the Bible, there's another incident that was basically driven by the same principle. It was in Genesis chapter 12. You might remember the story. Abraham has been told by God, you're my chosen guy. I'm going to build a great nation from you. You and your wife Sarah are going to have children, and from them there are going to be so many descendants you can't even number them, hardly. So, great. Problem is they didn't have kids at that time. Famine comes along in Canaan where they're living. And so Abraham says, well, let's go to Egypt because they've got food there. So he and Sarah go to Egypt. And he gets down there, and you might remember the story. Sarah, it turns out, was really beautiful. I mean, you know, she's an 11 on a scale of 1 to 10. And he gets down there and he thinks, you know, these Egyptians, can't really trust them. And I think one of them is probably going to try to kill me to get her. He becomes afraid. Now we have to stop and ask, okay, now wait a minute. Let's take that and just run with that. Let's suppose that somebody does kill Abraham to get Sarah. If that happens, can they then have children and become a great nation? No, he's dead. God can't keep his promise if he's dead. Therefore, is there any chance at all that somebody's going to kill Abraham to get Sarah? No, because God keeps his promise. He's going to see to it that you have children, so you're going to have to survive at least till then. So there's no worry. Abraham didn't believe it. He didn't trust God's protection. And you know what he did? He lied. He said to Sarah, I tell you what, I'm a little afraid of what they're going to do to me, so let's just tell everybody we're not married and tell them you're my sister. Okay? Now, nobody died in that story, but poor Sarah got forced into a terrible compromise because of Abraham's lie. She paid the price for his lie. Same problem. Not trusting God, got to do my own thing to take care of myself, and so, boom, somebody's going to pay because I disobeyed God, because I didn't trust him. When we fail to trust what God supplies is enough, it will show up in our choices in life. We start manufacturing life on our own and taking care of ourselves, relying on our own cleverness and our own schemes, which inevitably are disobedience to God. And it will have an impact on the kind of people we are and even how we relate and treat other people. It starts with us wanting something badly. Maybe it's just to be safe, or maybe it's just to get something we think is necessary for us to have full life here. And it starts with that and suddenly coming to the conclusion that I can't trust God to give this to me, and so I got to get it myself. That's how that goes. Now, you might be surprised that this kind of thing happens in a million ways in life. So, we were visiting with Michael and Carissa back east, and we drove down to Pensacola, Florida, to enjoy the beach there to watch the Pensacola Air Show. But the first afternoon we were there was the day before the air show. We got down there, and we went. They took us to a beach that's actually on the Pensacola Naval Air Station property. It's this nice beach, and so because it's on the Navy base, it wasn't crowded. Not a lot of people there. Beautiful beach. So we're sitting on this beach, and there's this group sitting a little ways from us. They weren't real close, but they were a little bit over there. And I was kind of on the end of our group, so I was closest to them. And I wasn't, you know, paying a lot of attention to them. So I wasn't, you know, being nosy and trying to get a whole list of who's there. But I figured out there was at least a mother and her two adult daughters and their kids. And then there were a couple of other assorted people there that I don't know who they were. But anyway, there's this group over there. And we're just doing our thing. We're on the beach having a good day, and they're doing their thing. I'm not paying any attention. But after a while, I began to become aware of the fact that there was an argument going on over there. You know, I wasn't trying to overhear and be noisy. You just couldn't, you know, you couldn't ignore it because it kept getting louder and louder. And it was going on between the mother and one of her adult daughters. And I don't even know what started it, but they were arguing about the right way to do something, and the mother insisted on one thing, and the daughter was insisting on, you know, on something else, and they were kind of starting to really go at it. And finally, the daughter says, oh, yes, mother, you're always right. I guess we always have to do it your way, mother. Well, the mother just fired right back. Don't you mother me. I don't have to put up with this. We're never going to do this again. I go to all the trouble to bring all of you here, and I get your attitude. That's enough of this. Sitting there watching this go on, you know, and I thought, well, gee, that wasn't the end of the discussion. It went on for a while. I won't bore you with the details, except I will say a good time was not being had by all at that point. So here's the question. What happened there? The mother and the daughter had something they really wanted. Both of them did. They wanted to be right. They wanted to get their way. And they wanted to be treated with respect and with love. And I can guarantee you that they weren't saying what God supplies is enough in this situation. I have to get it for myself. And if I don't think I'm getting it for myself, I can't just trust God. I have to act in ways that will demand that respect for me. And so you start getting barbed comments and harsh tones, and you're not, I need to get respect and I need to be right. And the result was everybody went away very unhappy. What did it all start with? It all started with, there's something I want. I can't just trust God and His love for me and His truth in my life. I have to have this for myself, and I'm going to get it. And even if I have to step on someone I'm supposed to love, I will get it. All starts with not trusting that what God supplies is enough. It's funny, during our travels, couple of days later, I got tested on this very point. To get home, we left Meridian, we took the train down to New Orleans, and we flew out of New Orleans to get home. So we had a flight from New Orleans at 7 in the evening, from there to Dallas, and then we get a connecting flight at 10 o'clock from Dallas to home. So we're there at the New Orleans airport and waiting for our flight, and I get a call on my phone from our airline. Automated message, your flight has been delayed. An hour. We got a problem. We had an hour layover in Dallas to make our connection. Our flight was delayed an hour. We're not going to make that connecting flight. It's going to be at 10 o'clock at night. How are we going to get home? So I ran over to a gate and talked to the agent and said, look, here's our situation. And, you know, how are we got to get a flight? And he goes, you know what? I really wish I had better news for you, but you're screwed. Oh, okay. That's not good. So I said, okay, hold on. So I got an idea. I'm going to call the reservations number, the 800 number on the airline. So I called the 800 number, and I get this woman, and I explain the situation. Okay, so we're flying from New Orleans to Dallas. We got a flight here that leaves at 10 o'clock, and our flight here is going to be delayed an hour. So I need some help getting rebooked on another flight, or can they hold a plane, or can they do something? And so she goes, okay, now what's your name, sir, and what flight number is you on? I gave her all the information, and she goes, there's a pause, and then she says, sir, I see that your flight is getting in just before 10 o'clock, and your flight out is at 10:07. I said, yes, that's correct. That's the problem. And she said, well, sir, I see that this reservation was made in April, and you've waited until now, and you've known about this all this time and haven't done anything about it. She's blaming me for the problem, you know? There's just this anger welled up. And I just wanted to say, lady, I really hope this call is being monitored for quality assurance. If you would just listen, ditz brain, I told you the flight is delayed because you have a mechanical problem on your airplane. This is not my fault, it's your fault. And I was just ready to blast her, and then I had this thought that popped through my mind. What God supplies is enough. And I thought, not in this instance, you know. I have something I want here. I want to get home tonight. And I want to be treated like a semi-intelligent human being. And I'm not getting either one of those things. And so then it came down to, am I going to trust that what God supplies is enough? And I had a little battle. And finally I said, okay. And as calmly as possible, I explained to the woman that our flight was supposed to get in an hour earlier. Hello. Didn't help. We still ended up spending the night in Dallas. But here's the thing. I didn't blast a woman. I didn't come away feeling kind of guilty because I'd been pretty ugly on the phone to this woman, even though maybe she deserved it. I did what God wanted me to do because I trusted what God supplies is enough. This principle applies every day of our lives in so many ways. When we fail to trust what God supplies enough, we will disobey God and we will do damage to other people and to ourselves, and we will disgrace ourselves. Also, then, when we fail to trust what God supplies is we will make some bad decisions, really bad decisions. David did. I'm going to go to Gath. what a dumb decision that was. You know, if David thought he needed to get out of Israel, do you know there were other nations that he could have gone to that weren't at war with Israel? Why did he not go there? He wasn't thinking clearly. He wasn't trusting what God supplies is enough. I have a good friend who is very successful. He loves God deeply. He has great knowledge of the Lord. He's respected by other believers, and he's a very intelligent guy. Very, very successful. But many years ago, when he was young and his family was just starting off, he realized he wasn't going to be able to support his family in the chosen career that he was in. And he decided, I'd better make a career change. And he tried to make a career change, and it went badly at first. And the family got into terrible financial difficulties. He was stressed to the max. Now, eventually, he got into a much better situation, and things have gone great ever since, and he's doing really well. But that incident scarred him. And he said to himself, I'm never going to be in that situation again. And the result was, he's become a workaholic. He has said, I am going to make sure that my family never is in a situation, I'm never in a situation where I don't have enough money to take care of my family. And so he's gone overboard, and his priorities have gone completely out of whack. And he knows it. Many people have talked to him about it. Yes, you're right, I need to change. And then he never does, because he is driven by this need to not ever be in that situation, and he can't trust God with it. He doesn't believe that what God supplies is enough. He's done fine financially. His marriage is still together. But his failure to make good decisions in his priorities is having a terrible impact on his own family and the next generation. He's making bad decisions, has been making bad decisions for years, because he doesn't believe that what God supplies is enough. So what are we supposed to do? You know, the conclusion is, well, we just stand here and go, okay, well, God's going to supply. I just trust God's supply. No, no, you know what? God has things for us to do. But he says, here's the focus. You need to be faithful to me and trust me in everything you do. The first rule of your life is, I do what God has called me to do, regardless of the cost. We were on a shuttle bus to the airport. We parked our car down there at a off-site lot, and then we're riding the shuttle, and I noticed on the bus there was this girl that was playing some sort of game on her smartphone. And I thought, that's got to be the dumbest game I've ever seen. There's just this little character walking along a path. And I thought, how boring is that? Well, little did I know, that is the hottest game on the planet. She was playing Pokemon Go. And Pokemon, I'm sure you've heard about it, is this game where you create this little avatar or this little character, and it leads you to places in the real world where you can go to Pokemon stops and capture Pokemon and all kinds of other stuff. And I don't get it, but that's okay. But I was looking at that, and I was, you know, that was the first time I'd seen it. I've now heard a lot about it since then. It's apparently creating lots of problems. But it occurred to me, that's a little bit like what we're here to do. God has a path for us. Follow the path. God will take you places. You just go where he takes you and do what he wants. And that's the goal all times. And trust that as you do that, what God supplies is enough. So my friend that's making the bad decision should have been saying all along, God calls on me to be a faithful man who is working hard to support his family, but within certain parameters in terms of my priorities. He needed to learn to be faithful to say, I'm living as God would have me live, following the priorities God would have me keep, and trust that that will be enough. Time and time again for us, here's the thing it comes down to. This is way better than Pokemon. God has a path for me. God has things for me to do. And I do that to the best of my ability and trust that as I do, what God supplies will be enough. When I don't do that, bad things are going to happen. things that I will end up saying, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. Wish I'd have thought that one through a little better. Let's trust that what God supplies is enough, because when we do, what we're going to see is the glory of God, and we're going to see the life that He has for us unfolding before our eyes. Let's pray. Father, it's interesting to watch David make decisions that are so very understandable for us, because we do the same thing. We quit believing that You can actually provide what we need, even though You've promised, and we start panicking and start trying to take care of ourselves and start protecting ourselves, and we start doing it our way. And when we do that, Father, we never experience Your peace, Your joy. We end up hurting other people. We end up hurting ourselves. We get fearful. None of the things that You want for us happen, Father. So help us, Lord, to remember always that what You supply is enough, and that when we forget that truth, we're going to end up saying, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. Help us, Lord, to do the things that we know are a good idea, to follow You and to trust You with the outcome. Amen.